This is an audiobook presentation of Public Enemy Zero by Andrew Main. Public Enemy Zero is available for only $1 at the Amazon Kindle store or via the Kindle app on all major tablets and smartphones, including iPads, iPhones, Blackberries, Windows 7, and Android. It's also available on the Barnes & Noble Nook store and Apple's iBooks. Or you can get a complete, uninterrupted copy of this audiobook at andrewmain.com/books. Chapter 12. When Detective Rios arrived on the scene, there were already two squad cars, three ambulances, and a cluster of parking enforcement vehicles outside the yellow tape perimeter. He parked next to Detective Simmons' SUV and got out. On the other side of the street, just inside the perimeter, were four parking enforcement officials gathered in a huddle. They'd heard the call on the radio and came to check on their fellow officer. One of them was talking in an excited manner and jerked his thumb over at a parked car near another parking cart. The front window was completely smashed in. Several bloody handprints were on the hood and dashboard. Pieces of broken glass reflected like tiny green diamonds sprayed with blood. The passenger side window looked kicked in as well. Usually when he saw a smashed-in window and that much blood, it was in a crumpled car in the middle of the highway. He looked at a place parked in a quiet neighborhood between two other cars. Other than a dent in the driver's side door, the body looked intact. Rios looked over at the nearest ambulance and spotted his partner. She was talking to a young woman in a stretcher. Paramedics were cleaning up injuries and taping up her hands in preparation for the trip to the hospital. Underneath the bruises and gashes on her face, she looked like she was probably an attractive girl. Who could do a thing like this to a young girl? The answer, unfortunately, was a lot of people. He walked over to his partner. Simmons was still dressed in the pantsuit she'd worn to court earlier that day. Dark hair, athletic, and in her early 40s, she was in better shape than most of the men in the department, himself included. Rios still worked out, but was beginning to get the cop gut that came from spending more time taking kids to soccer practice than keeping in shape. Rios waited behind Simmons as she talked to the girl. He knew not to interrupt that part of the investigation. She was good at getting people to relax and talk. "So what happened?" Simmons asked in her most matter-of-fact tone. She preferred to let people talk in their own terms before drilling down for particulars. Some cops started off with a checkbox kind of interrogation, which was aimed more at filling out an incident report than figuring out what was going on. Rachel looked up from her arm, where a paramedic was cleaning blood out of the wounds on her knuckles. She was still in shock and not reacting to the stinging sensation. "My boyfriend, my ex, he showed up and I answered the door." Rachel paused for a moment and stared into space. "What happened after you opened the door, Rachel?" asked Simmons.
I don't know. It happened, you know. I don't even think I said hello. And then I was on the ground trying to kick, I think to keep him off me."
She looked at Simmons as if she could explain what took place. "So you're on the ground." Simmons looked at the metal clipboard in her hands. "So you're on top of the stairs by your apartment. Then what?"
"We were running."
Simmons looked at the notes. Mitch was chasing you?"
I think so."
"So where was your current boyfriend at the time?"
"Rick? Where's Rick?"
Rachel tried to sit up, but the paramedic gently held her back down.
"He's being treated right now. He's going to be fine."
Simmons noticed Rios behind her and handed him the clipboard behind her back. "Can you remember where Rick was when you opened the door?"
"Treated? He was taking a shower. Why is Rick being treated? Did Mitch hurt him too?"
Simmons pursed her lips. Rios had noticed that it was her tell for when she was trying to make sense of something. "He's going to be fine. When was the last time you remember seeing Rick?"
"When he was in the bathroom. I think that was it.
Did Rick approach Mitch? Did the two argue? Rachel shook her head.
No, I don't think that they've ever met.
Okay, we need to talk to Mitch. Do you have a number where we can reach him? Maybe a photo?
Rachel turned her head to look around. In my apartment, on the table.
Rich looked at the clipboard. The first officer on the scene had taken down her address. It was only two streets over.
I can get it.
Simmons turned to Rachel. Do you mind if my partner goes into your apartment and gets your phone to bring it to you? You can take it to the hospital with you if you like.
Rachel nodded.
Rios looked at the apartment number, then handed the clipboard back to Simmons.
Be back in a second.
He looked down and gave Rachel a smile. Couldn't imagine what he would do if someone had done something like that to his own child or sister. He knew there were two sides to every story. In his mind, though, nothing could explain the smashed-up face on the scarred and trembling girl. The anger turned into what would have been a brisk walk into a fast jog to the apartment. He took a shortcut and passed through a wooden gate next to a spilled-over garbage can. In the middle of the alley, between the two buildings, there was a metal gate on the ground. It looked like it had been ripped from its moorings. There was blood all over it. Some of the bars were bent in. He made a mental note to make sure they took that in as evidence. Down the street, he could see another ambulance. Paramedics were working on the current boyfriend. His right leg looked like a bloody mess. From where he was standing, it looked like they were just trying to stop the flow of blood before they took him to the hospital. The man was screaming out in agony. He overheard one of the EMTs mention something about trying to save it. From the report Simmons let him look at, it looked like the man was walking three blocks on a green stick fracture. How that was possible without being high out of your mind was beyond him. He was curious to find out what was in that blood when they took him to the hospital. Rios reached the foot of the stairs. It was taped off as part of the crime scene. At the top of the stairs, he could make out where part of the support bars had been bent in a little. There were a few drops of blood. He looked around and found another staircase leading to the second level. The screen door to the apartment had been ripped partially off its hinge and hung at a funny angle. The wooden door was wide open. Rio stepped inside and looked around. Well kept and in order. It didn't look like the fight started inside there. He could see wet footprints leading from the bathroom to the door. Those were most likely the current boyfriend's, he assumed. Rios wondered if he was using, but didn't want to use the girl's permission to get the phone as pretext for looking for drugs. Angry ex-boyfriend? New boyfriend? Girl? That was all you needed for a first-rate domestic disturbance. Add some alcohol to the raging hormones and testosterone, and things got worse. How the parking officer figured into it was the next question. Rios would bet that she was just running into Mitch on the really wrong day. From somewhere, he heard a whimpering. His hand immediately went to the butt of his gun. He loved dogs. Dogs didn't always love cops. He heard the whimper again. This was a small dog. Rios relaxed. He spotted a large couch and leaned down. Under the couch, two scared-looking eyes looked back at him from the dirty locks of blonde hair. It was trying to hide behind its paws.
It's all right. Rios patted the ground to see if the dog wanted to come out. Your mommy is going to be fine.
The dog didn't want to budge. It just let out another whimper.
Okay, buddy. Stay there.
Rios made a mental note to shut the door before he left so the dog wouldn't wander. They'd ask Rachel if she had someone to take care of the animal. If not, the department had a person that could handle it. Rios was a little surprised the dog was still there. Often, in a domestic disturbance, it would follow the owner and give chase to the assailant like a good pack animal should. Of course, other times, they just hid. He found a phone on the kitchen table and assumed it was hers. The lock screen was a photo of the dog. As he pulled the door closed, he flashed the screen at the couch, with the dog hiding under it.
Some protector you are.
Rios walked back to the ambulances and handed the phone to Rachel. Simmons was talking to the detective,
who had interviewed the parking officer. While the woman's injuries, consisting mostly of lacerations, bruising, and a probable concussion, weren't critical, the loss of blood was. Rachel struggled with her phone but couldn't operate it with her bandaged hands. Rio held out his hand. "Let me do that for you." She handed him the phone.
"It should just be under Mitch."
Rio scanned through her contact list. No Mitch came up. He looked again. Nothing.
"Would it be under his last name?"
"No. Try Dickhead."
Embarrassed, Rachel looked off to the side.
Rios grinned. "Breakups are hard."
He scrolled through and found a phone number next to the entry for Dickhead. He noticed there were a few other obscenities in there as well. Not his business, he reminded himself. He wrote the number down.
"What about a photo?"
Rachel shook her head.
"I deleted them all," she thought for a moment. "He's still on my Facebook, though. Go ahead, do a search for Mitchell Roberts."
Rios clicked open the Facebook application and looked up the name. One of the benefits of social networking was how easy it made finding photos of people and intimate details they'd never tell the police face to face. He found the photo. It was not quite what he was expecting. It was a friendly, affable face. Not that it mattered. Faces can hide a lot.
"Do you mind if I email this to myself?"
"Sure."
He handed the phone back to Rachel.
"I saw your dog back in there. He's pretty scared. You have a friend who can come look after him?"
"What about Rick?"
Rios hesitated.
"He hurt himself chasing after Mitch, and he's going to the hospital with you."
"Okay."
Rachel leaned back and closed her eyes. Rios decided to leave her be for now. The ambulance, carrying the parking officer, drove off. Rios half expected the other parking officer to follow after in a motorcade in their carts like cops did when an officer was shot. The supervisor came over to explain the situation to the parking officers. Simmons finished talking with the detective that took the woman's statement and walked over to Rios. In the background, a police photographer was taking photographs of the smashed-up car. He was trying to lean into the car without touching the glass. Rios morbidly wondered if he used the same camera to take photos of his family.
"This is going to be fun," said Simmons as she neared him.
Rios arched an eyebrow. "Oh, so?"
"Like the girl, she can't give a coherent explanation as to what happened."
"That's not surprising. She's still in shock. What did you expect?" Rios would have been surprised if anyone who went through that had at least a probable concussion could remember much of anything. Simmons shook her head.
"She talked a little. What she says is kind of mixed up. She says she was attacked, but when they asked her where, she said, well, she was outside of the car and he was inside."
"I'm sure she'll sort things out."
"Yeah, but when a defense attorney gets a hold of her first statement, it's going to make his job a lot easier."
Rios looked over the smashed-in windshield and splattered blood. His stomach churned at the thought of the guy getting away with it.
"So what's our next step? Get him fast? Get a confession?"
Simmons nodded.
"Give him a call. See if he's willing to walk in. The computer pulled up no prior, so it's doubtful he'll be lawyered up just yet. If we get an incriminating statement, we can make the case sail through a lot easier."
A voice called her on the radio. She pulled it from her waist and answered. Rios could overhear the dispatcher say something about the mall nearby. Simmons put the radio back down.
"We need to get to the mall right now."
She looked around for the officer in charge of the crime scene.
"What's going on?"
"I don't know. Some kind of riot or a fire. It sounds big."
Chapter 13. Stolen car. That's what he was in. A car he just jacked from the woman back at the mall. Mitchell's life had just turned into one of those downward spirals he's seen on the news. Next was the chase, then the helicopter, then it ended with him making a pathetic attempt to run away as people watched from a news helicopter. He'd make it 10 feet, then be tackled to the ground. Worse for him was the possibility of what would happen next. He wouldn't just be tased and kicked. He'd be torn apart.
He wanted to turn himself in, but he was afraid of what would happen next. He cautiously turned up the main road by the mall and kept driving. He tried to keep pace with the traffic and not stand out. Subconsciously, he sank down in his seat, as if people were seeing a car with an invisible driver would notice. At the moment, he just had to keep his focus on not getting stopped. Doing that meant avoiding anything that looked suspicious. "Fuck," he said as he drove through a red light. He needed to pay attention to what he was doing, he scolded himself. Sirens were coming at him from the opposite direction. Already? Prior experience told him to pull over to the side of the road. Fear told him not to. He kept driving and the squad cars blew past him. They were heading to the mall. Of course they were. People were dropping off the roof back there in one horrific trail of carnage from the food court to where he'd stolen the car. Stolen car. He had no idea where he was going. He had no idea what to do. This wasn't the kind of thing he thought about. He was a third-rate radio host on a second-rate radio station. The radio station. The fax machine. All those police reports he'd read when he came in when he was working. He had to have learned something. Mitchell searched his mind. How do people get caught? They get caught when they do something stupid, like drive through a red light. Okay, don't do that again. They get caught when they run. Okay, don't attract attention. They get caught because they look like criminals. What did all the men's in the bulletins look like? They were either black, Hispanic, or white guys that had neck tattoos that looked like they didn't finish high school. They almost always dressed like thugs or homeless people. Mitchell looked down at his ripped shirt. The collar had been pulled loose, and there were tears in it. Specks of blood dotted his chest. He had "criminal" written all over it. He had to resist the impulse to take it off right there in the car. He looked over at the passenger side seat and saw his backpack. He still had it. There was another shirt in there. He had put that on when he got the chance. Where was he going? A fire engine raced past Mitchell, snapping his attention back to the road. He realized that his best chance of getting far away was right now. But to where? He only had $30 on him. Hell, how would he even spend the money if every cashier wanted to kill him? He saw an ATM in the middle of an empty parking lot. Should he go empty out his account? It had to be then or never. If he used it further away from the crime scene, they'd know what direction he was going. Direction? Mitchell realized that if he wanted to go north and get as far away as he could, he was going the wrong way. He needed to go back where he came from, past the mall. The mall. Was that stupid? He realized it didn't matter. He didn't want to go towards Miami, where it was more populated and he had less familiarity. If he was chased down there, there was nowhere else to go unless he felt like swimming to Cuba. Mitchell got in the turn lane and took the car back to the other direction. He spotted the ATM and pulled in the parking lot. He couldn't help the fact that the camera on the ATM would see him, but if he parked in back, he would avoid the car getting seen. Whatever that was worth. He looked around the parking lot to make sure it was empty. Pulling up the ATM in a stolen car was bad enough. He didn't want to have to deal with the fear of someone getting between him and the car to try to murder him. He put the car in park, but left the keys in it. He walked briskly around the ATM, looking over his shoulder every few seconds. His hand trembled when it tried to pull out his wallet. He took a deep breath and put in the card. Mind went blank for a moment as he tried to remember his PIN code. He closed his eyes and took another deep breath. It came to him. He keyed it in the touchpad and withdrew the 500 maximum. There was still another 300 in his checking account. He had no idea what he'd use it for now, but it would have been better to have it. More sirens were coming towards him. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw three ambulances in a row heading toward the mall. Oh, man, he thought. That's a lot of emergency personnel. All because of him. Mitchell heard brakes squeal. A bus was coming to a stop at a bus stop in front of the parking lot 20 feet away from him. There was no point in waiting to see if anybody got off. By then it would be too late. Mitchell hurried back to the car. He shut the door and belted himself in. The card! He'd left it back in the machine. Christ. He was not good at this, he reminded himself. He saw three young black men get off the bus with backpacks. He felt guilty for thinking they were just going to steal his card. More guilt. Then he realized it wouldn't be a bad thing. If someone stole it and used it, it'd put the card far away from him. Damn. He thought of that earlier, he would have wrote his PIN number on it. Maybe they'll take it. Maybe not. The card was gone for him now. Now he needed to get as far away as he could and think of his next step. He also had to figure out how to get away from the car sooner than later. It didn't look expensive enough to have tracking in it, but it was a hot car, and the license plate could be traced. He either had to ditch it or change the plate for another one. He didn't know which was the smarter idea. Mitchell waited for the bus to leave, then entered the road from the parking lot and headed back toward the mall. Once he was past it, he would take some of the side streets and just keep going north until something came to him. As he neared the intersection, by the south end of the mall, another row of ambulances drove past and into the mall. He'd see squad cars, unmarked sedans with magnetic blue lights to their roofs piling in as well. That made him even more anxious for some reason. Maybe it was the thought that those cars contained detectives and not just beat cops. He tried not to look, but all the other cars had slowed down as they passed the mall. It was hard to ignore the flashing lights from the fire trucks, ambulances, and police. He allowed himself one glance, although he was afraid he was going to get sick from all the anxiety. Two of the fire trucks had their ladders against the roof. Firemen carried people down one by one. Mitchell tried not to count. Plus, it was hard to see from where he was. But it looked like 100 people were up there. He didn't want to think of how many fell or were trampled. Pangs of guilt seared into him like hot pokers. He knew he had to do something. He thought he felt like a victim in all this. He hated being the fugitive. He had to do one more thing before he flat out left. Mitchell pulled out his iPhone from his pocket and dialed 911. 911 emergency services, how can we assist you? People are trying to kill me. Slow down, sir. Who's trying to kill you? The girl. My girlfriend. Fuck, the people at the mall. Everyone. I see. Are you in a safe place now? Are you fucking kidding me? What is safe about everybody trying to kill you? Mitchell knew the flood of emotion was making him sound like he was insane. Do you need the police? So they can fucking shoot me? Calm down, sir. I want to help you. It says here you're calling from a cell phone. What's your exact location? Are you near the mall? Mitchell's heart skipped a beat. They can trace these things. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Sir, are you near the mall now? If you're hurt, one of the paramedics can help you. Just find a place to sit down. Oh, man. They thought he was one of the people, one of the victims back at the mall. Thank you, he thought for a moment. I know this won't make much sense, but when you watch what happened, really watch, you'll understand that they attacked me. Yes, sir. We need to keep this line available for emergency calls. If you need assistance, just ask for one of the paramedics or talk to a police officer. We have more coming. She paused. Lots more. Mitchell hung up. Then powered off his phone so they couldn't track it. Maybe he had more time. Maybe they still didn't know what happened at the mall. He practically tried to confess, and she didn't understand. A car honked behind him. Mitchell jumped. He'd been standing still for so long he was holding up traffic. He sped up and moved away from the mall as fast as he could, without causing an accident or getting stopped by police in his stolen car. Chapter 14. When Rios pulled into the mall parking lot, the first thing that came to his mind was a circus. The fire trucks and the police cars with flashing lights were all laid out in a ring around the mall. On the inside, he spot ladders where firemen were helping people off the roof. He looked for smoke. He couldn't see any. Riot? At the mall? Was it some kind of Justin Bieber autograph thing that went out of control? He looked at all the people standing on the roof waiting to be helped down. Why would people be up there from a riot? Unless there was a fire. Didn't make any sense to him. Between the two fire engines past a row of cars, he could see a sheet on top of a body. It looked like it fell from the roof. Fell? Jumped? Pushed? put his radio on an open channel, and he heard a first responder team go back and forth with clip chatter.
Found 12 more in the upper corridor.
Have 3 in the food court.
6 in the stairwell.
3 on escalator 1.
What were the numbers? Injured? Dead? Alive? He spotted Simmons' SUV and parked next to it. She was already jogging toward the mall. She had her first aid kit under her arm. Rios grabbed his, chased after her. He caught up with her as she passed the first row of fire engines.
What the fuck? He asked. I have no idea. I thought we were going to get statements, but...
She gestured to a row of 40 people sitting on the sidewalk. They looked banged up, but not as bad as the people in the stretcher she saw scattered around near different ambulances. A van came to a stop in front of them. A dozen doctors and nurses came piling out with first aid kits of their own. A female doctor pointed to a line of people, and half the group went towards there to help them. She led the rest down to the mall through the front of the department store. Rios looked over at Simmons.
It's like one of those terrorism drills we used to have.
I know, but these people aren't actors and community college volunteers paid to wear red-colored Karo syrup for a few hours. They found another detective, who'd been called onto the scene early on. He was talking to a mall cop on a stretcher. They left half of his face was covered in bandages and his right arm was wrapped up. Simmons called out to him.
Brooks!
Brooks walked over to them, tall and thin, just over 50. He looked 70 that day. His thinning red hair was in total disarray. His white shirt and tie were covered in blood.
Where can we help?
Asked Simmons. Brooks rubbed his hand on his forehead.
The paramedics will pull us in if they need to patch someone up. Right now, the firefighters are pulling through the bodies and trying to find out who needs what kind of attention.
What happened out here? Asked Rios. Brooks turned around and looked at the front of the department store, then back at Rios and Simmons.
Here?
This is nothing. He waved his arm from one end of the mall to the other. We got people falling off the roof here. He pointed toward the center. People trampled in the food court. He pointed to the far end of the mall. And people crushed in escalators and crammed inside a corridor in a storage room. We can't even get up there yet. There's so many people stuck inside.
Fire? Asked Simmons.
No fire. No smoke. It looks like an all-out panic.
He nodded to the mall cop and the stretcher.
As soon as one of them is up to it, or a mall management gets here, we're going to look at the security tapes.
Simmons looked at a row of people lined up on the sidewalk, being tended to by paramedics.
What are they saying?
Brooks shook his head.
Nothing that makes sense. Most of them have no idea why they panicked. A couple said they were being attacked, a few others said to get him.
Rios looked around.
To get who?
They haven't a goddamn idea who, Rios. Not a clue.
Simmons looked toward the entrance. The doors were being held open. Inside, she could see more people being treated.
When can we get in there?
Yeah. We should start investigating now. Keep your first aid kits if any of the medical personnel need any help.
Inside the mall entrance, the paramedics had set up a triage area. EMTs treated the people who came down from the roof or those who fell and survived the fall. The first goal was to get to the seriously wounded they could get to the hospital. Rios saw over 24 people leaned against walls or laying on the floor. Most of them were dressed in casual work attire and looked like they had come from the mall from nearby businesses to get lunch. Their shirts and blouses were ripped. Many of the women were missing one or both of their shoes. Few were talking. They all looked shell-shocked. Simmons noticed something and pointed it out to Rios and Brooks.
I see a lot of scratch marks and ripped clothing.
She gestured to a team of paramedics applying antiseptic onto the backs of several people who were leaning forward with their skin exposed. Brooks nodded.
There's a lot of that. People in back were trying to pull their way through.
Simmons thought over it for a moment.
Yes, but whenever I've seen people panic to leave a place like a club or a movie theater after a shooting, they might have bruises, but... never this much clawing.
They passed by a woman in her late 30s, with chestnut hair and freckles, who whose neck was wrapped in white gauze. A bright red blood stain was soaking through. She leaned against the wall, cradling herself. "You take the cell phones away?" asked Rios. So far, he hadn't seen anyone talking into one. Brooks turned around.
"Huh? No, why?"
Simmons looked around the entrance. She couldn't see anyone with a cell phone out either. That was kind of odd. Usually, the first thing people did in a crisis was pull their phone out. She had lost track of the number of times she had to ask people to put down their phone so she could ask them questions.
"People mostly dropped everything. The women let go of their bags." He pointed towards the slacks of a young Hispanic man. They were ripped along the sides. "A lot of pockets got pulled as people tried to claw through."
As they left the first triage area, Simmons took one last look. In some ways, it looked like a brawl had taken place, but with a few differences. There were a lot of bruised and broken noses from flying elbows, but there weren't many facial scratches. Necks and shoulders, to be sure, but it looked like people were trying to violently inflict damage only as they moved through the crowd. There weren't a lot of injuries that looked like retribution for not letting someone pass by. Past the entrance on the interior of the mall, there was a small field unit where a cluster of doctors and nurses were working on the more seriously wounded. Through huddled shoulders, they could see a woman with both legs completely fractured. Under another stretcher was a man with his face caved in. They heard the sound of a helicopter fly overhead and land somewhere on the roof. Brooks pointed toward the other end of the mall where they were headed.
"They're medevacing people out via helicopter on the far end." He pointed to the small medical unit. "This isn't the worst of it."
They walked further down the mall toward the center atrium. Most of the shops had lowered their gates. Simmons assumed that the clerks were being sequestered elsewhere. That part of the mall looked relatively normal, besides the shuttered doors in the middle of the day. There was a group of people toward the back in a cordoned-off department store watching them. They looked unharmed.
"This end of the mall, the part under the roof, didn't know what was going on. They just heard the commotion and saw people falling," said Brooks.
Simmons walked over to a young sales clerk in front of a woman's clothing store. She had tears streaming down her face as she watched the people being taken inside and treated. Mascara ran across her delicate cheekbones.
"Excuse me, miss," said Simmons. "Are all of your salespeople here?"
The young girl shook her head.
"Phil and Steve are gone."
"Who are Phil and Steve?" asked Simmons. "Did they work here too?" The girl nodded.
"They heard the screaming from the food court and ran down there to see what was going on. No one can tell me if they're okay."
Simmons clasped the girl on the shoulder. "Don't worry. We'll find out." She turned to Brooks. "When are we releasing people?"
"As soon as we get a head count and contact information."
He looked over at the girl.
"We'll have someone come get you home soon."
The girl nodded. Brooks continued to lead Rios and Simmons toward the food court. When they rounded a bend, the atrium came into view. Overturned kiosks, shopping bags, food trays, and drinks were all thrown around. Simmons could see three bodies under sheets. It looked like a plane crash, minus the plane.
"Holy crap!" she exclaimed.
"We haven't even got to the bad part," said Brooks.
The naked man in the forest had been feeling uneasy. He let the other self do what he was supposed to do, but he was having second thoughts. He stole away from where he was supposed to be and came to the forest place. A light rain had made it damp. Mosquitoes swarmed and kept biting him, but he ignored them. He had to speak to the Earth Mother. She sat there, staring at the oak tree, as large red welts began to cover his naked flesh. He ignored the urge to scratch and waited. He had another Ziploc bag in his pants. His other self pants, he corrected. If she didn't show herself, then he'd take a blotter to let him see what his mind was denying him. He looked over at the khaki pants folded on a nearby rock. Should he? In the corner of his eye, he saw something move on the oak. He sat upright and put the thought out of his mind. Vines and leaves began to form the familiar face. Oh, how he wanted to touch it, to kiss it, to be part of it. What is wrong, my child? He tried to find the words. The other self. He may have made a mistake. Yes, the other self did it. What has he done? My eggs? Your eggs are fine for now. They're safe. It's just that I fear the ones who trust the other self may grow suspicious. They may know that he plots. The other self is so important to us right now. You must make sure that he does not lose their trust. I know, Earth Mother. It's just that the other self made choices. Some of them hasty ones. He has powerful friends. They find out what he's done. My eggs, child. My eggs are all that matter. When the other self is no longer useful to us, then bring them here. Yes, Earth Mother.
This is an audiobook presentation of Public Enemy Zero by Andrew Main. Public Enemy Zero is available for only $1 at the Amazon Kindle store or via the Kindle app on all major tablets and smartphones, including iPads, iPhones, Blackberries, Windows 7, and Android. It's also available on the Barnes & Noble Nook store and Apple's iBooks. Or you can get a complete, uninterrupted copy of this audiobook at andrewmain.com/books.